Thank you so much. Let me tell you about our spotlight sponsor. It is Home Title Lock. Home Title Lock. We found out. Did you find out about this first, or did Pat?
Because yeah, I did. I did.
You told Pat.
Yeah, we talked about it, and when I heard about it, I wanted to look into it, make sure that it was something real. But it is. It's one of the fastest growing crimes in America, according to the FBI.
Yeah, and so you tell Pat, and Pat comes to me and tells me, and he's like, well, you got to get this. I just got this. And I said, you just got this? He's like, yeah, Stu just got it, and he told me. Once you find out what it is and how real it is, and that it is so easy to steal the title of your home, you lose your home, you're mired in debt. It's awful. There's only one company that stands against it and stands in guard of your title, and that's HomeTitleLock.com. Go there now. Get the free report. HomeTitleLock.com.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Joe Biden has been running for president since 1987, and he can't seem to nail this down. He was supposed to come out today and announce that he's running for president, but for some reason he needed an extra day. I don't know if it was to talk to his beautiful wife, Jill, or if there was a problem that he needed to hug 20 more people today. I don't know what it was, but now ABC is confirming that Joe Biden is in the race officially tomorrow. If that's true, he's got a problem with his progressive base, because in the straw poll of progressives, only 8% support Joe Biden. This is going to be interesting to watch him run. Quick zigzag down the field. Run left, run left, run right, run right, run center, run left, 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 left. We'll see. Joe Biden will open our conversation on that in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pain. Pain makes everything suck. Pain, pain just makes you say, I can't do it anymore. It makes all the little things seem like huge things. God bless you if you have teenagers and pain. You can get rid of the pain. You can't get rid of the teenagers. If I could take a relief factor and it would make my teenagers shrink in size, it would be great. What I can't do is that. I do have relief factor, which will curb the inflammation in my body and make the pain better, so I can endure the teenagers a little easier. Relief Factor, relieffactor.com. Call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, or you can go to relieffactor.com. Get out of pain. Get your life back. Relieffactor.com. Joe Biden's due. Joe Biden.
Yes. You're now, excited? Biden mania?
No.
Are you pumped up for Biden Palooza?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Joe-cella.
No.
No?
I like Joe-cella. Yeah, I like that one.
Okay. Joe-cella is supposed to come tomorrow. So what we expect now, and ABC News has confirmed, and this is different than previous reporting on when they're going to announce, which were just sources inside the campaign and the buzz is and blah, blah, blah. ABC News at least now claims that they've confirmed that Joe Biden will announce he is running for president of the United States tomorrow via a video. That will be Thursday, and then Monday will be his first campaign event, and that will be, I think, in Pennsylvania. He's gonna kick it off in Pennsylvania. So it's interesting because he is the front runner coming in. He will be the guy, he'll come in as the favorite, a favorite in a 20 person field, though, is not necessarily that exciting. You want to be ahead, obviously, but a 20 person field can shake out in a million different ways, obviously. So that's one of those things where it could be the best moment of his campaign is Thursday morning right before he presses play on the video, right? Like, that's a very realistic possibility because people are going to pick apart his record. It's very lengthy. It is, he's done a lot of stuff and he's run for president multiple times. And if you remember, he did not win any of those times. He is not an unbeatable candidate by any means in a primary. Democrats have handled him in the past. Now, he comes in here with a sort of the cachet of vice president for 8 years, 8 years that Democrats, generally speaking, remember well. Although there's a turn on that a little bit with progressives lately, but generally speaking, they remember the Obama administration pretty well. And he also comes in with a couple of advantages over people like Bernie Sanders. For example, Biden does very well with black voters. You know, this he is, I think, America's second black president. So Bill Clinton was first. Biden would be second. I don't know if Barack Obama counts. But I guess because depends on how he identifies on a particular day. We'll have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. But Biden does very well with African-American voters. He does very well in the Midwest as this kind of his target area. That obviously could be helpful in a place like Iowa, could be helpful in some early primary states. It could be very helpful to him in South Carolina, where he is. It's probably the biggest favorite of all, you know, as we start this off, where he looks to be the strongest. So Biden's got a great path. He's leading the polls. All the I smell hair and touch people's shoulders too often thing has not really given him too much of a bump downwards.
Well, may I bring you this from the CDC?
The Centers for Disease Control?
Yes.
Okay.
Public officials have confirmed the insect, and I can't pronounce the name of this insect, is a blood-sucking creature that feeds on animals and humans and has a particular fondness for biting faces. They have confirmed the presence of this bug, which they have deemed the kissing bug. They have said for the first time, it is here now, and it is in Delaware. I am not making that up. So the kissing bug that likes to creep up behind you and kiss your face and nibble on your face and your ears is in Delaware.
Wow. Maybe this is what happened to Joe. Maybe he was bit a long time ago.
Or he's just the kissing bug. He may be.
I think it's just him.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking it's more like a situation where like the fly, like maybe he went into a chamber with one of these bugs and they meshed somehow physically. And like the molecular structure of his body turned into half kissing bug. So now he goes up and just, this is a good movie.
Goodbye. Could be. A family in Kent County, Delaware contacted local health authorities after something had bitten their child's face while she was watching television. Could have been Joe Biden.
Could have been Joe Biden. I don't think there's any doubt. In fact, now I'm confirmed it. ABC News is confirming that too.
The kissing bug.
Yeah, they're confirming the kissing bud fly meshing theory. This this is big. Don't call them for confirmation.
Fever, swelling at the infection site, fatigue, rash, body aches, eyelid swelling, headache, loss of appetite, nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, swollen glands, and enlargement of the liver or the spleen, and voting Democratic.
They appear on Amtrak's often, because then we can confirm
that. Very often on Amtrak's, but only to one station, which is weird. We're going to take you to one of the other candidates, Kamala Harris.
Or Kamala Harris.
Kamala. I can't get it right now.
No, you had to redo the entire monologue yesterday because you kept saying Kamala over and over
again. And I think I still said Kamala.
I mean, look, a lot of people are saying Kamala. So this is not one of your worst pronunciation violations as a broadcaster. It is really pretty common. But I mean, if you listen to her say it, is Kamala.
Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. We're going to do Kamala Harris and share some stuff that we shared on television in just a second. So stand by for that. She's still third
in with the polling, Joe Biden. Yeah, if Biden's in, it's usually Biden, Sanders. And then there's a mix. It depends. Buttigieg, I would say, might be third now. Harris, maybe fourth. Then you've got the Beddoes of the world and Warren in that next kind of group. Maybe Booker.
I have some stuff on Buttigieg as well that we'll get to here in a minute. First, cybercrime only getting worse. We hear almost daily now of massive data breaches. And here's the problem. Your information is out there. Pieces of your information. And what they do is they sell those pieces on the dark web, and then they have, you know, somebody or you know, an algorithm or something that puts all of that information together. So the bad guys are going out and they're saying, give me all of these social security numbers. now give me all the banking records. And they can buy them for like $15,000, just these huge, huge files. They combine them, and now they have everything they need to get you. This is what happens every single day. And the one company that I trust to watch all of my data, all of my information on me, is LifeLock. They detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number on sale on the dark web. And if there is a problem, a U.S.-based restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. These are things you just are not going to be able to fix on your own. Nobody can prevent all identity theft, monitor all transactions at all businesses. But LifeLock is the best in the business, and they find the threats that you might miss. So join now, get 10% off your first year by using promo code BECK. That's 1-800-LIFELOCK, or head over to lifelock.com and use the promo code BECK for 10% off. lifelock.com. We break for 10 seconds. Station ID. So Kamala Harris, her father, wrote a blog post just in January. And do you find it interesting, Stu, that this little family secret was put out on a blog the year, the January, that he knows his daughter is going to start running for president?
Seemed like an odd, maybe a little dump here. Like, yeah, they're kind of just dumping the information in the most obscure source possible so they mm-hmm. can say, we were ones who told you about
we
it.
We already addressed about? It. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That does seem a little suspicious.
Yeah. Okay. Especially something like this. Why would you put this out? I mean, who would be proud of this in their family? He, certainly is not. So her father wrote on the Jamaica Global in January of this year.
I don't go to that website. I have a paper subscription, though. I make sure I get that delivered in a physical form.
I used to, but the newspaper delivery boy, he just never got it up to the porch.
Oh.
It's pretty big. On Sundays, it almost crushed the poor kid. he wrote, "My roots go back within my lifetime to my paternal grandmother, Miss Christy Brown, descendant of Hamilton Brown, who is on record as a plantation and slave owner and founder of Brownstown." Okay. So his grandmother was a descendant of a slave owner and a plantation owner. Okay. You know, that's kind of bad for Kamala.
I mean, nothing to do with what Kamala did. However, if you happen to be a person who's out there in the public continually talking about reparations for people, descendants of slaves... Perhaps, you know, I don't have any descendants of in my family that own slaves. She does. Shouldn't she be the one paying it? If someone's going to be paying reparations, I think it should be all exclusively Kamala Harris.
If you're also one hanging out with a lot of people who are like, white people are bad, white people are bad, this white culture, that kind of takes this apart too, doesn't it?
Hmm. A lot of interesting developments here by this one little piece of family history that they themselves put out. You have to believe that, you know.
We're the ones who told you. Right. You're exactly right. That is what they're going to say. We're the ones who told you this. We've already addressed it. It's already been out there. This is
old news.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So who is Hamilton Brown? Who is Hamilton Brown? We know he was the founder of Brownstown. Well, it appears that he was also violently racist, violently hateful. Now, this is the account of Harris's great-grandfather. At the command of the overseer, he proceeded to strip off part of his clothes and laid him flat on his belly, his back and his buttocks being uncovered. One of the drivers then commenced flogging him with a cart whip. This whip was about 10 feet long with a short, stout handle. It's an instrument of terrible power. It's whirled by the operator around his head and then brought down with a rapid motion of the arm upon the recumbent victim, causing blood to spring at every stroke. When I saw this spectacle now for the first time exhibited before my own eyes, with all of its revolting accompaniments, I saw the degraded and mangled victim writhing and groaning under the infliction. I felt horror-struck. This is not the great-grandfather. This is that saying I felt horror-struck. It's the one who stripped the slave and said to the coachman, whip him. The rest of the account is even more horrifying. It has a passage where the man is just a bloody stump, and he's laying on the ground pleading and screaming, think me no man, think me no man. In other words, what am I, a dog? I'm a man. It's crazy bad, crazy bad. Now, this is Kamala's great-grandfather, and this was just released by her father in the press in Jamaica. Now, she has asked for reparations for descendants of former slaves, and maybe that's her black guilt. Is that what that is, Kamala? She's gone on and called everybody a racist, but has she dealt with calling her own family racist? And if her family was a racist, if her family had this guy in there, should that say anything about Kamala Harris? I would say no. We don't hold people responsible for the sins of their fathers or their mothers or their brothers or sisters. We don't do that. That's barbaric. But that's what reparations does. It holds us responsible for something that we had nothing to do with. So if you want to play the progressive game, Kamala Harris is a nightmare. She comes from stock of wicked racism. Her parents benefited. She benefited from the shoulders of slaves. Shouldn't she pay reparations? The answer is no, because she's not the great-grandfather. She didn't found Brown Town. So how do you square that?
You certainly don't. I mean, you think someone who, with that family history, would understand that that's not how you're not responsible for the sins of your parents. I mean, this is one of the things, the very fundamental things America did, right, was to not make it to a caste system, to not make it so royalty. You didn't get the benefits of your parents. You didn't get automatically excluded if your parents and grandparents weren't special people. And the same thing happens for when they did things wrong. If your parents and grandparents, great-grandparents were slave owners, you do what you do. You're an individual. You do the correct thing while you're alive.
Well, see, here's the problem. If you flip this around, because I know that there are people who will be for reparations who theoretically could be listening, and they would be saying, well, that's not what this is about. That's not what this is about. This is about giving African Americans their slice of the American pie because their grandfather, great-grandfather, whoever, helped build this land on slave labor. And so what they should have had, what they helped build, we should take some of that money and we should give it to their ancestors. Well, no, again, because the people living today aren't the ones who earned that. If we were alive, if it was 1865, I would be for saying, yeah, you know what? They do need 40 acres and a mule or whatever it was. Let's pay that. I'd be all for that. But the people who were directly affected and directly would have benefited from it aren't alive today.
Yeah, we know how ridiculously, first of all, it's impossible to implement with any, it's impossible to implement as stated, right? If your idea is to give money to the descendants of American slaves that comes from, in theory, slave owners, right? It's impossible. First of all, it's unconstitutional. You can't just target one specific race for a tax increase, right? Like, that's not something that can happen. That is legitimately completely unconstitutional. And by the way, the people who would be arguing for that first would be African Americans, who are like, yeah, I don't think we've seen the history of this country. I don't think targeting one race for a particular tax increase or a poll tax, let's call it, is a good idea.
You know what? I have to tell you, though, I think you're wrong in the fact that I think there are a lot of people, and I wouldn't even put African Americans in this. I think African Americans may be more fair than progressive white people.
Oh, clearly.
Yeah. you know, but the African American would be the beneficiary of it.
True.
But I think even they would look at it and go, that's ridiculous.
Well, let's get into that then. Who's the beneficiary of it? It's certainly not someone who lived in Jamaica until 4 years ago, right? It's certainly not someone who lived in Nigeria and immigrated here 20 years ago, mm-hmm. right? It's only people who are actually descendants of slaves, right? So it's certainly not slavery in other countries, right? No, what this is, Glenn, is a giant, it has nothing to do with slavery. It is a giant redistribution of wealth plan. That is how the only way they could implement it is if they did it that way. Mm-hmm. They would find a way to redistribute money, because they would have to redistribute it from rich black people, too. You can't just go in there and take money from only white people. That is not something that's supposed to happen in this country, and I don't think could constitutionally occur. You can't go target a race and pull money from them. You can raise taxes overall and redistribute it to people at a certain level. You could do that under the auspices of reparations. We're making this old thing right. And will some people who weren't descendants of slaves get this money? Sure. And will some people who were descendants of slaves that have become wealthy have to pay a little bit? It's not going to be perfect, of course. But the bottom line is we're righting a long-term wrong the best that we can. And it's going to wind up being just another excuse for another one of these programs to take money from the evil people who have it and give it to the wonderful, virtuous people who don't.
We are just on top of a socialist nation right now. Mm. Just on top of it. Back with Pat Gray coming up.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
So I started realestateagentsitrust.com because I had no idea what a good agent did. You know, when I would have to sell my house, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm even looking for. Can you sell houses? How about mine? And then you sign a contract with them. And then, you know, many times they just sit and sit and sit and sit. And somebody's like, yeah, well, you know, I'm going to have some more real estate agents out on Wednesday. And they're going to look at the house. Can you really? Haven't we done this how many times? And then you're going to have an open house? So you have to find the right agent. And we've done that for you with realestateagentsitrust.com. We started working with the 500 best agents, according to the Wall Street Journal, about 10 years ago. Really learning from them. What does it take to be a great agent? And then we just found those agents like that all over the country. So what you do is you just, if you want to buy or sell a house, you contact realestateagentsitrust.com and we're going to get you the best agent in your area. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now, sell your house fast, on time, for the most amount of money, and get your new house, the perfect house. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Heard a bits and pieces there of Kamala Harris and her family history. You can get the whole story at blazetv.com/Glenn. Last night's TV episode, use the promo code Glenn.
If you ask me, Simply Safe is the only company doing home security right. Because the traditional companies have outdated systems and expensive long-term contracts. Or you have security gadgets that you need to monitor yourself. But Simply Safe has the around-the-clock 24 professional monitoring and police dispatch covering every door and window in your home for $15 a month. Plus, you can install it yourself in less than an hour. Get 10% off your system right now at SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. I was listening to Pat record his podcast today. You can listen to it live every day on the blazetv.com.
Radio. Either one.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, I'm listening to you today.
Yes.
And you're going off on Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about how corrupt. And I'm listening to you talk about Ukraine. And you're mm-hmm. visceral about that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's... I mean, he was holding out on $1 billion of aid to the Ukraine for them to fire their
chief prosecutor general.
Mm-hmm. And if they didn't do it, they weren't going to get the $1 billion. So he's holding that over their heads. And they're like, well, you don't have the power to do that. You can't do that. And he told him, yeah, make the call. See if I can't do that. If I don't have him the news that he's fired by the time I got on the plane back home, you're not getting your $1 billion. He got fired before Biden got on the plane. And then it turned out the prosecutor general was investigating Biden's son. And that's apparently the reason he wanted him fired. Well, I mean, what American vice president cares about the prosecutor general of another nation? Pretty corrupt. Pretty bad stuff.
Unbelievably corrupt.
And now to hear that the I didn't see the Next Night show about China.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's even worse? A lot
worse? Oh, no, it's a lot worse. Stew. I mean, am I exaggerating? A lot worse than that.
Yeah, I think that's true.
This happened before Ukraine, if I'm not mistaken. This happened before Ukraine. And in that episode, I show you exactly how Joe Biden's son and John Kerry's son. So this is worse because you have the vice president and the secretary of state. Their sons in business together.
Yeah.
And they start this business as soon as daddy gets, you know, ordained and daddy's vice president, John Kerry's son and John Kerry's campaign finance guy start this business with Joe Biden's son. They don't have experience in this. OK, this is a brand new firm. Within a year, they're flying to meet with the equivalent of BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, Chase, JP Morgan, all of the biggest account or biggest investment firms in America.
Mm-hmm.
All of the biggest ones they're meeting with within a year at the same time Joe is meeting with the head of state. Then a few months later, Joe and his son fly to China. Joe goes and meets with the head of state while Joe's son meets with the Bank of China. Okay? The Bank of frickin' China.
Incredible.
So he goes and he meets with the Bank of China. They get a deal that Goldman Sachs doesn't even have. The Bank of China, which is the official government-run bank, gives them, what was it, $1.5 billion? To Joe's son's firm, you can invest this any way you want. And then you see, how did they invest it? The first thing they invested in was a nuclear power company in China run by the government that was being investigated at the time, openly investigated by the FBI for bribing our people to get secrets from our nuclear officials. Okay. That's who the first one they invest in. They then send people to jail in America. The FBI arrests Americans who have accepted bribes from this company trying to get nuclear secrets. It's out. They're convicted. And Joe Biden and John Kerry's sons still remain in business with that. And they go a step further. They then go into, and I don't remember the name of the aerospace company, but it is the Chinese government aerospace. They make all of their military equipment. They decide to invest in that company. And they have all this money and they invest and they buy that company. And then they're like, you know what we need to do? We need to buy this American company. There's this really good American company that makes this anti-vibration stuff. It's really good. It's an automotive company. Well, not exactly. It's dual use. Yes, you can use that, but it's also really, really good for like fighter planes. So they buy this American company and they put it over there. Now, by the way, the company that bought the American company, the Joe Biden investment company, the Chinese aerospace company, had just been accused and charged in the United States for stealing our stealth bomber technology.
Jeez.
OK, Okay. All of this is happening while Joe Biden and John Kerry are negotiating with China. $1.5 billion in access to the Chinese government money to a firm that just started with three kids running it? Holy cow.
What a great turn of fortune there.
Yeah.
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 They must have showed a lot of promise.
So my question is, when you see the Ukraine, when you see China, wait until you've got to watch the episode.
Yeah, I will.
If you want to see the episode, it's at
crazy.
It's at the blazetv.com/Glenn. Join us. Just do a trial subscription. You can, you know, watch the show. And if you don't find value, cancel the subscription if you want. Use the promo code Glenn and you'll save $10. But when you see that thing on the chalkboard, it's like, oh, my gosh.
And how is it that nobody's picked this up? How is it that, you know, the only place you know about that is from the Blaze? The New York Times not interested in that? Washington Post? He must be so confident in the fact that nobody's going to investigate that. Because otherwise, why would you subject yourself?
Well, we show you that I think it was Fortune magazine and Wall Street Journal. They reported on all of these things in pieces. Hey, look, he just started
the
company.
Put the pieces together?
No.
Was there a chasm between all of the pieces?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They put all the pieces. They reported on the pieces. They didn't. Nobody has put it all together. Peter Schweitzer.
He did a lot of that in
his book.
John Solomon's done some work on more of the Ukraine, but he's been all over that as well.
Mm-hmm. There's two investigative reporters that have done it.
You know, he doesn't run and nobody looks into that because they don't care because he's out now. But if he runs, I would think, you know, that's a pretty important story then, the corruption of Joe Biden and John Kerry. But you've got to look into that now, right? You've got to take that into account now that it's out in the open.
As long as you're not corrupt.
Right.
I think that's the problem.
That's true.
I think there's three things sort of protecting him from this. One is what you're talking about, Glenn. A lot of politicians do this sort of thing with their families, and they don't necessarily want to open up that door and give that Peter Schweitzer observation any credit.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want people to be looking in, because I mean the Biden people will just start looking into everyone else's and they'll all find stuff like this. Mm-hmm. I think too, you also have it is a complicated story. I mean, you just told it pretty well and it's still complicated. If you see it on the chalkboard and it's really laid out, you can understand it, but it's not an easy, hey, Joe Biden's been sniffing my hair type of moment, right? Like, it's a difficult thing to convey.
But that's the press's job. And you notice you said something fascinating to me, because it's absolutely true. Nobody's going to go and dig for this except opposition. And the opposition may not want to dig for it, because then what are they going to find in their opposition? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's the job of the press. But the press is not opposition. They are not opposition. They are opposition. Well, they're opposition to Trump, but they are not opposition to the progressives or to the left or the Democratic Party. So if the candidates don't make it an issue, they won't make it an issue.
Yeah, and that's why the third thing is, if it happens and he gets called out on it, which I think would happen if he were to win the nomination in the general election, but in the primary, you're basically accusing the Obama administration of mass corruption,
and which they didn't even have a scandal.
They didn't even have a scandal.
So you don't want to accuse. You don't want to do that.
Exactly. And I think now there's a separation there between Democrats and the social, like a Bernie Sanders socialist left who doesn't care about the legacy of the Obama administration, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there is that line, and it's possible. Look, in this field, there's, you know, seven or eight legitimate, basically, socialists out there, and then a bunch of other ones that just happen to have all the same policies as socialists. you know, it is, one of them could easily be motivated to
Sanders
take Joe Biden down early.
Sanders would be the most likely.
Warren,
that, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
You could see one of those. You know, there's a few people. Sanders doesn't care. I mean, Sanders is the one who really doesn't care about the Democrats. He's not even a Democrat except this time of year. Mm-hmm. You know, he legitimately switches in and out of the party when it comes to the presidential primary. So this is a guy who doesn't care about the Democrats. He doesn't care about the Obama legacy. He thinks they didn't go far enough. He thinks all these other candidates won't go far enough. So he may try it. And I think, you know, look, it's pretty legitimate. I mean, it's well backed.
Solid.
There's banking records that support all this. There's reporting of each part of it.
No, it's
obvious.
And it's so clear on what is happening because of the timing and, you know, the actual banking transactions, who they got involved with. You know, it's the Secretary of State and the Vice President. All of this stuff is so very clear. But then you just add the fact that these weren't guys who were like, you know what, I'm going to start a financial firm back in 1999. They started it in 2009.
Jeez.
They started it when Daddy was sworn into office. It's crazy. It's really, truly crazy. And it's the sickness that was started and really kind of perfected by the Clintons. This is the Clinton Foundation, except they didn't cover it with a, you know, they didn't have to say, well, it's a 501c3. No, they didn't do any of that. They just straight up went in for business.
Right.
And this is why, this is truly why we are headed towards a socialist oligarchy. We are headed, the oligarchs are, we're in a place right now where our politicians are saying to themselves, this ain't going to last. This just ain't going to last. You know what? I'm going to set myself up for the future.
Get what I can.
I'm going to get what I can. Mm-hmm. I'll set myself up and my family up for the future. And it's the exact transition. We're probably 1990, maybe 1989 Soviet Union in their thinking. We know I can see the end coming. This thing is going to be a train wreck. It's going to collapse. There's going to be new guards. I'm going to be part of the new guard. I'm going to take my communist uniform off. We're doing the exact opposite. I'm going to put my communist or my socialist uniform on.
And they're doing that.
I'll be an oligarch on the other side, and I'll own the gas industry.
That's why they can't win.
Yes.
They can't win.
Yes.
Ever again.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how we prevent
that. And we have to.
But they can't win.
We have to select guards.
Yep.
For our freedoms of the Constitution and outlined in the Bill of Rights. We must hire guards for that at this point. All righty. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It's Blinds.com. Blinds.com having a flash sale right now. With 15 million windows covered and 30,000 five-star customer reviews, Blinds.com is America's number one choice for custom window coverings that are affordable. So whatever you're looking, you know, whatever you're looking for, blind shade, shutters, you know, big plantation shutters, beautiful. They change your house. They'll make the entire process affordable and surprisingly easy. You won't break the bank. And I will tell you, the plantation shutters, I think it's the reason why Stu bought his house. He was renting, and he put these plantation shutters in, and I know he was like, I'm not leaving without these damn shutters.
No, they are awesome. They are.
Whether you're looking for energy efficiency, or you're just looking to rejuvenate the feel of your, you know, one room or your entire house, the experience is great at Blinds.com. Right now, they're flash sale. Go to Blinds.com. Use the promo code Beck. You'll get 20% off everything from April 25th until April 25th. Now, 20% off guaranteed, plus an extra $20 off if you use the promo code Beck. That's Blinds.com. Take 20% off everything, plus an extra $20 off the top with promo code Beck at Blinds.com. You know, what's amazing to me is how close we are to a refounding of our nation. And I don't know if people, I don't know if your friends who don't listen to talk radio or don't watch the news every day are not following things. I don't know if they realize how close we are to a refounding of this nation. And I don't mean that in a good way, that we may be one election away. This next election could be the end of the free market. Could be the end of the constitutional republic as we know it. I mean, America will still go on, but it won't be the America that any of us grew up in. And I don't know if you saw the thing from the founder of Home Depot. Did you not see that? Do we have that audio? Can we play this audio? This is the founder of Home Depot. He just came out and put a video out about the free market system. Listen a little bit of this.
While I'm no longer in the management of the Home Depot, I still believe in the free market enterprise system that helped build it. That's why it pains me to see people in this country glorifying socialism. Young people especially have been indoctrinated into believing that free enterprise is immoral because it enriches the greedy and depresses the poor. Even the word capitalism is not politically correct to use. But the reality is that the free market system has created the biggest middle-class population in the world. And while some may say socialism is well-intentioned, the fact is it robs people of their independence, their dignity, and their finances, leading to government dependence.
Okay, stop.
Suppression of ideas. And
what makes it this crazy to me is we're having to say these things.
Yeah.
We are that close. Next Wednesday, a week from tonight, we are doing an all-hands-on-deck special called Socialism, A Warning from the Dead. You need to see the plan that was hatched a long time ago that could put us in a period of about 3 years before this country is flipped. We'll show it to you next Wednesday. I gotta make sure I take my relief factor today because I've got to do my NFL draft tonight, right, Stu?
Your picks are going to come up. You're going to do it tomorrow on the air, right?
Oh, tomorrow on the air?
Yeah, the NFL draft tomorrow night.
I'd like to spend a little time looking at it in advance. You know, I got to get into the... Well, we'll talk about it here in a second. First, let me tell you about Relief Factor. Relief Factor has four key ingredients that help fight inflation. Your body is fighting inflation, and that's what really causes our pain. You're having a hard time sleeping through the night, neck, shoulder, back, hip, knee, foot pain, whatever it is. Relief Factor can help you get your life back. ReliefFactor.com. Call them now at 800-583-84, 800-583-84. It is ReliefFactor.com. Well worth giving it a shot. It works for me.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Do you remember every time that I was warning that Nazis would rise again in Europe? Nazis in Greece, in Germany, in France, and here in America, when I would warn that Nazis would come back, I was called an anti-Semite somehow or another. Well, now you can... Nazis are everywhere. No. Not like my prediction. No. Now everyone's a Nazi. Everything is a Nazi. And today I finally draw the line on the Nazi talk. I'm going to introduce you to the fat sex therapist and her Nazi talk in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I don't know if you've noticed, but everything's covered in that yellowish green dust again, which one of the mayors from one of the Carolinas, I don't remember which one, small town there, she said that she was targeted because somebody had put this greenish yellow dust all over her car. While nothing was written in it, she knew that that was a hate attack. Well, yeah, either that or it's spring. And that's pollen, Your Honor. But she was sure it was a hate attack. And I want you to know now that every sneeze that you have can be lessened with filter by, because all that crap is in the air. And if you haven't changed your air filter from the winter, your air filter has worked overtime all winter to try to keep the air inside the house, somewhat under control. And so it is just bogged with all of this crap from the winter. Now you're opening up the windows and it's trying to suck the pollen in too. You got to change the air filter, and you can do it now with FilterBuy, filterbuy.com. You go online at filterbuy.com and you order your filter. They'll send it to you within 24 hours. You'll have it. You can swap it out. It will definitely help your itchy eyes and allergies.
And you set it up once and never have to worry about it again. Most
and you save 5% if you do that. It's at FilterBuy, filterbuy.com.
You look exasperated.
The fat sex therapist. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to play the audio now of the fat sex therapist.
Don't do us any favors here.
Here it is.
Body size has always been a marker of coloniality, especially
coloniality.
Since the rise of capitalism in the 1600s and and how we've seen white supremacy at work in many of these capitalist structures.
Agree. Totally agree so far. I am in on the coloniality.
Coloniality. This is not even a word. This is not even a word. You're making up words now.
I disagree with that. Coloniality is definitely...
Coloniality. If it's a word, it's a new word. They print words all the time.
Ugh. It does just...
What's it say?
It's showing up mostly in just like social justice.
Yes. They make up words. They're making up words.
Coloniality of power is a concept interrelating the practices and legacies of European colonialism in social orders and forms of knowledge advanced in post-colonial studies, decoloniality, coloniality, and Latin American. Who are the two guys that you had on? It was Peter Boghossian and James Lindsay. Mm-hmm. You had them on for a podcast, which is coming up in a few weeks, I think.
Yeah.
We're releasing it. And these are the guys that, two of the three people who put these fake studies and all these,
This is their kind of
this
stuff.
This is their stuff. Like these things, they're just a jumble of words. Like they just come up with these new words and they throw them in there and they make it seem like these are proven concepts or have some merit. And it makes you sound smart. If you can pronounce them, unlike me. But if you could, it makes you sound smart for a few minutes until someone decides to start thinking about it. And then they say, wait a minute, what you've just said, you know, it's like that moment in Billy Madison where it's like, everything you've said has just made everyone here dumber. Like that is like, you have made everyone here stupid because of your answer.
But what she's doing here is such important work. Again, back to the fat sex therapist.
And so the end of fat phobia, it means the end of Western civilization as we know it.
Stop. The end of fat phobia means the end of Western civilization as we know it.
So wait, is she arguing for this or against it? So she's saying if fat phobia ends, which you'd assume that she wants to happen, then it will be the end of Western civilization. So she wants that to happen? She wants the end of Western civilization. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. Western civilization, fat phobia has nothing to do with anything except what people look at and say, I want a piece of that. Okay? It's what you generally can't have or don't have. It's what the rich have. Okay? That's what it is. It started like this. Years and years and years and years and years ago, when everybody was a serf or a smurf, I'm not sure. I'm not up on my colonial... What is it again?
Coloniality.
Coloniality. Mm-hmm. Long before the free market system, painters were painting fat asses naked on women and hanging them in their castles. Why? Because the picture of a fat woman was the picture of health and wealth. Mm-hmm. You weren't starving. Why did ladies paint their faces so white in France? Because you had to work outside to grow your own food. So the idea of a very pale skin was a sign of leisure. Now we glorify not white skin, because white skin, you're sitting indoors all the time. You're working. The sign of a tan is, oh, he plays golf all the time. He must be wealthy. Oh, they're outside. They must be jet setters. That's all this is. That's all this is a sign of leisure time.
But that doesn't explain fat phobia.
Yeah, it does.
How?
Because
people are afraid of fat people, and you've not discussed
because
that.
Because if you are fat, it's the sign that you are just an average working Joe that is going out there, busting their butt. You're a mom in the school, you know, going to take the kids to school. You don't have time to work out. You're just eating at McDonald's, where the rich Well, they have
personal trainers.
Personal trainer. They have time to go and work out. They have time to exercise. It's the in crowd. That's all that is. Is all that is.
That's so. But you think that's what she's talking about when she's talking about fat phobia?
No, she's no. She's saying,
or she's talking about, like, you won't hire fat people, and you don't think they're sexy, and you like they're. It's like there's these all these privileges of not being fat.
Correct.
That are
That's
being
what
applied
she's
here.
Talking about.
Okay.
She's talking about, you know, the privilege of skinny people. This is a society of privilege. Blah 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 blah.
And
yes,
arguing,
but it's a human thing.
But she's also arguing for that to be torn down, right? Like, she wants Western civilization to end.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because it'll be replaced with rainbows and unicorns and puppy dogs.
Always is.
Always is.
All the countries around the world that have gotten rid of capitalism always worked out well.
Yes. And boy, you want to talk about skinny people, go to North Korea. All right. Go ahead. Play some more.
Those things are connected. The end of fat phobia would mean the end of racialized capitalism. So when I talk about structures and systems, I'm talking about the root of it all. I'm not talking about us making a new law or us, I don't know, doing something else stupid like that.
Right?
We need to burn it all down because it's all toxic and bad.
So she wants to tear down the whole society.
Because it's all toxic.
I really don't understand, though. Like, so the theory being, if we were to become unafraid of fat people, then racial capitalism would go away. Can you draw the connections there?
Tonight we're going to start talking about how to politicize our definition of body image, because oftentimes we actually get stuck thinking of it through the lens of a white supremacist.
What?
White supremacist happens every day in these little things, and yes, even in fat. We should be critical of the use of science and production of knowledge to contribute to promoting this idea of certain bodies that are fit, able, and desirable. Is my fatness, is that what causes my high blood pressure? Or is it my experience of weight stigma? I'm pretty sure it's your fat, sweetheart.
My experience of fat stigma?
Yes. Yes. However, she pivots to support scientific findings as she pondered intentionally pursuing weight loss, claiming what we're discovering scientifically is that it's just not possible. She challenges all authorities, not just the authority that science has given us, but also the legal authority. The same way I want to challenge all laws, I want us to challenge all prisons and policing. She's a therapist who claimed that she will never have a professional code of ethics that tells her what she's allowed and not allowed to do with her body. She doesn't think that it's surprising that the man who shot up Christchurch in New Zealand was a fitness instructor. She said there is a clear communication.
What?
Listen to this. There is a clear communication that there is still an idealized body. Nazis love this idea of the perfect body, so it makes a lot of sense that he was a fitness instructor.
You know, she's going to be surprised to hear it doesn't make a lot of sense. That's probably something that she should,
what are you talking about?
Aware of.
Makes a lot of sense.
Does it?
A lot of sense. Hmm. All fitness instructors are Nazis. I'm calling for America to come to its senses on Nazis. Nazis are clearly bad guys, but there's a few defining characteristics of a Nazi. And I can't believe I have to go through this, but I will. One, they hate Jews. Two, they hate everyone that doesn't look like them. That's important to say it that way because they happen to be in Germany, so they believed in the Aryan race. But you could be called a Nazi if you hate everyone else except your race. That's a sign of a Nazi. Another sign of a Nazi, and you really have to have more than one. You're a nationalist, which means you put your country first at the expense of all others and you believe your country should rule the world, even if it's through brutal force. Next one. Socialist. You have to be a socialist. You have to believe that, yes, your country should run everything, even by force in the entire world. But you also believe your leader and a group of you Nazis should lead the entire country. And even if it's through force, tell everybody else what exactly they should do, should not do, what they should eat, how they should work, all of that. That's what a Nazi is, not a fitness instructor. Okay? Not a fitness instructor. Also, a Nazi is not necessarily someone you disagree with. Yes, I disagree with all Nazis. But no, not all people I disagree with are Nazis.
I didn't follow that.
No, nobody in America did anymore. Mm. Nobody in America does. And you know what? They don't care to. Car repairs are becoming a bigger and bigger problem. You used to, you know, you used to be able to go to, you know, Pep Boys or, you know, whatever and get a part that you could just, you know, fix yourself. Not anymore. Now you have to take out a second mortgage, it seems, for a simple repair. And you're often stuck bargain hunting for the best deal because how are you going to afford the $1,000 to change a sensor? It's craziness. Well, CarShield makes the process of fixing your car for a covered repair really easy. And you can have your favorite mechanic do it or dealership. It's your choice. That's why I have extended vehicle protection from CarShield. I have it on my trucks. They also provide 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is being fixed. So if your car has 5,000 to 150,000 miles on it, it doesn't mean you have to pay high repair bills. Car Shield's administrators have paid out close to $2 billion in claims, and they're ready to help you. So get covered by the ultimate in extended vehicle protection. Call 1-800-CAR-6000. That's 1-800-CAR-6000. And mention the promo code Beck or visit carshield.com and use the promo code Beck. You'll save 10%. That's carshield.com. Promo code Beck. Carshield.com. 1-800-CAR-6000. Mention the promo code Beck. 10 seconds, station ID. I don't know why this story appeals to me. I'm just going to get it out of my system instead of having it sit on my desk and ignore it until the weekend comes and then throw it away. So Nicolas Cage is in the news because of some angry rendition he did of Purple Rain at some, you know, karaoke club, whatever. I don't know why I was actually reading this story. But here it is. Apparently, the performance was fueled by his desire to annul his recent marriage of 4 days. Nicolas Cage apparently tired of his new wife and has filed for an annulment. He says they were wasted when they got married in Vegas and acted on impulse. There were signs it wasn't going to end well, apparently. They got into a heated argument right before walking down the aisle. Erica, however, his wife, doesn't see that way. She says the marriage is completely legitimate, and she says Nick has asked her to come back. She wants spousal support.
Yeah, yeah.
4 days into it, she wants spousal support.
Well, she got, you know, accustomed to a lifestyle.
Exactly right.
You know, look, he needs to support it.
It's exactly right. I mean, the only reason why this interests me is what happened to Nicolas Cage?
It has not been a good road.
It
for
has
Nick.
Not been a good road. I mean, first he didn't he have to sell all of his homes? He was buying crazy homes everywhere.
He made lots of money. Then he got very irresponsible with it.
Yeah.
Then had a need to basically make every movie offer to him to try to pay off all the debts.
Literally. And he had to make every movie offered to him.
So he did, and a lot of them were really, really bad.
And he's a good actor.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a good actor, you know, but it's tough at this point to take anything he does seriously. Because he's made bad movies.
You're not saying, oh, the new Nicolas Cage is out. You're seeing it now going, oh, new Nicolas Cage. It could be really good, but I'm going to let somebody else step into that lava pool first.
You kind of wonder why he's not taking stuff like a supporting actor role on a good movie. Like, he can still do that. You know, I don't know if he just feels like he has to be the lead. Maybe it's like an ego thing, or maybe people are just like, look, we can't do, this guy's too nuts. We can't do anything with him.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it would be good to see this guy turn his life around, you know, and you'd think if you'd lost everything, you might have turned your life around. Yeah, it might be your bottom, but apparently no. Uh-uh. He just got married, and 4 days later, he's like, what have I done? I've sobered up. No, that was a bad idea.
He's not exactly signaling competence.
No,
right?
He's really not. He's not giving... If you were hiring for movies, you know what I mean? You're like, hey, you know, we've got Nicholas, and then somebody hands you that story, and you're like, yeah, I don't think we're going to go with Nicholas Cage.
It's like, and there's a certain level of... Because businesses can go bad, right? You can open up a restaurant and it goes well for a few months, and you know what? Maybe people aren't coming as often, and then you lose, right? And you have to close it down. But then there's like the business that opens and like a week later has to close. And you're like, what was the plan going into this? Like there was a football league that started this year called the AAF, and it was like highly promoted. They promoted it for an entire year, and it launched to much fanfare for, you know, big sports fans that want some, you know, football in the summer and the spring. It comes on, it debuts, it was on, I think NBC, they got a contract there, and the NFL Network, the games are on TV. It's rolling in like 2 weeks in, there's a story, it's like they had to get an immediate cash infusion of $100 million. Like, wait a minute, what were they planning on? Did they think they were going to sell more tickets than were in the stadium for five times the cost each? And then a few weeks after that, they like move the location of the championship game. And then 2 weeks after that, oh, we're folding. They didn't even make it through the first year. Like, you have all of this money, huge names behind it, like big investors, and just you can't even make it through one season. Your business plan didn't. I mean, your business plan should basically be, if only 2,000 people show up to every game, we'll still get through this first season. And they had much better attendance than that. They had TV contracts, and the thing fails. And I just, like, when you're going into it, why are you starting it if every single thing has to go right for you to win?
Well, I could comment on this, Stu, but I'm saving all my sports commentary for tomorrow.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
NFL draft day.
Yeah.
We have NFL draft picks with Glenn Beck.
Okay, now, so here's the thing.
Mock draft.
Here's the thing. I said it would be good to get Stu to review Game of Thrones without knowing anything about it. And so the other day he said, you know what? I think Turnabout is fair play. I think it would be entertaining to have you pick
maybe the top 10
draft picks.
Predict them in the for like a mock draft, and we'll give you the information that you need to make those picks.
Except I don't think you're giving me the information I need.
No, we put this together yesterday. I think you're going to have plenty.
Yeah, yeah. I believe it's their dating history, their grades in school.
We'll see. We'll see what you get tomorrow.
All right. That's tomorrow. Glenn's draft picks.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. Let's say you have to mail something important. You know, let's say you have to put your taxes into the mail, and you could fit all of your taxes, wouldn't this be a dream come true, on the back of a postcard. Do you send your taxes in on the back of a postcard, you know, with all your information on it? I don't think so. Why? Because you know that's not really private. You know somebody in the post office, even though they're not supposed to, kind of read that. Not a good idea, right? Same thing, you're going into a Starbucks and you're using their Wi-Fi. Yes, but it's password protected. No, it's not. Everybody has the password. Everybody has a password, and it's not really protected at all. Hackers can just sit in the same coffee shop and they are looking for your private information. That's why you have to have a VPN ASAP. Get a Norton Secure VPN. Just go to norton.com/VPN.
the protection online that you need. A safe way to connect to the internet starts at $3.33 a month. That's Norton.com/VPN.
We have the Socialist Spotlight on Kamala Harris available for your on-demand pleasure. At blazetv.com/Glenn, use the promo code Glenn. Save yourself $10.
Okay, so here's the thing, and I'm not going to go over this. We went over it yesterday, but just to refresh your memory in case you didn't hear it yesterday, you've only been hearing this news elsewhere. That song sounds really racist, but it is actually from a Broadway play that was written for her and another guy who was a civil rights activist whose father was a runaway slave. They were mocking racists. That's what that was. Let me give you another example of this is exactly the same kind of song.
Germany was having trouble. What a sad, sad story.
From Broadway.
Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around and then we found the man for you and me. And now.
Now, you may not find that's why darkies were born to be humorous, but it is the exact same intent as this song. And some people may not find, you know, singing about the master race being funny either. But it is to mock those people. But nobody seems to want to even talk about that. Have you heard that anywhere, Stu? Have you heard anyone talking about this in this way?
Very little. There's been some. It's been noted in a few stories. And, you know, you're in paragraph 8, still reading about Kate Smith. You could find that out and find a little detail on. Hey, this, by the way, was also sung by a civil rights activist, and it had that history. But it's not the focus of the story, mm-hmm. right? The focus of the story is this racist. There's a racist statue out in front of Yankee Stadium, and they took it down. And that's what's fascinating, I think, about this. From when you step back a little bit and start thinking for a moment, I mm-hmm. think this was in 1933, was it 1931?
31 was the other song, 33 is this. She was very early in her career.
Right, and again, another piece of perspective, she was in a situation where she was under contract to do every song assigned to her. This is not like today's, it's not like Ariana Grande. She doesn't get to make her pick her own songs. She doesn't, you know, that's not what happens back then. Back then, you had an executive saying, you should sing this song. So it's even possible, right? Like, it doesn't exonerate her from the racism claims because this is a song that was meant to parody racist. It was assigned to her. She sang it because she had to sing it. Now, she may also, every indication is that she would have agreed with the sentiment. She recorded 3,000 songs, 3,000 songs, and they've picked out two with these issues, one of which is completely explainable, as we have just talked about. The other one was she was playing a role in a movie, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, she, like, whether, you know, again, like all the actors who just sang Springtime for Hitler, do we hold them responsible for Hitler? Do we think they're all white supremacists?
Well, I saw them in pictures in Nazi uniforms.
Right. Like, it's just crazy. And yeah. Everyone knows it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no one remembers what Kate Smith was like. No one knows what the perspective of the time is. People don't get to paragraph 8 of these stories.
Imagine what her family is feeling.
Oh, I know. And they're very upset about it. I mean, this is a woman who, again, raised, talking about Nazis here, raised the equivalent of $10 billion in war bonds to defeat the Nazis.
Herself.
Well, you know, some of it was with groups, but like I think it was she did one by herself. It was $100 million in one fundraising aspect that is now, you know, much more than that. Think about that. I mean, that is something that's certainly more than I will ever achieve in my life, mm-hmm. that you will ever achieve with your life, mm-hmm. that probably almost anyone here will ever achieve in their life. Mm-hmm. If you could raise $10 billion to fight the Nazis, I don't know. I mean, think of the work you've done with the Nazarene Fund, for example, which has been amazing. I mean, you know, millions and millions of dollars. This audience has raised millions and millions of dollars to support pulling Christians out of the Middle East. It's been, you know, incredible. It wasn't $10 billion, though, right? No. Like, I mean, this is one of the most amazing achievements by an individual probably in our nation's history.
Now, I contend that this is only happening because it's, again, tearing down our traditions, tearing down. It's all about Kate Smith singing God bless America. That's all that is. That song was written for her. That was written for her to be able to raise money to defeat the Nazis. So we have to erase that. That's what this is about. But it's not going to start. It's not going to stop at Kate Smith. And you know what? America, if this is what you decide to do, then it shouldn't stop at Kate Smith.
Mm, it's true. How about the New York Yankees? This column from David Marcus at the Federalist, who points out if you're going after Kate Smith, you also have to fold the New York Yankees franchise, because the New York Yankees franchise intentionally kept black athletes off of their team for decades, despite the fact that they were better than many of the white athletes that they paid to play baseball. There was a ban, a complete ban, as you may remember, that black athletes could not cross. There was a crossing of the color line that needed to occur, and it didn't occur with the Yankees. In fact, it didn't occur to the Yankees till later. They went, by the way, this is after 1933 and 1931, when Kate Smith was supposedly singing these racist songs. Years and years after that, the Yankees banned all black people from working on their team. Think of which one is worse.
Somebody who did a parody song to parody how bad racists were, or actual racists working at the New York Yankees saying no black people can work here.
Think of that. I mean, it's much, much worse. And of course, as adults, right, we realize, I think correctly today, that was a really bad time, that people were making really bad decisions, and the people who made those decisions were wrong and should be looked in the context of the time as, be judged for some of those actions. I think, obviously, we all admit and all agree that baseball should not have been banning black players. However, here we are, 70, 80 years later, and we all are like, okay, well, that was a really bad time in history. I'm really glad it's gone. And you know what? The Yankees, the people who are there today have nothing to do with that. None of those people were there doing it now. But the Yankees themselves will tear down a statue of a woman who did not one thousandth of what the Yankees did to hurt black people. And not to mention, not one thousandth of the good that Kate Smith did for the country. Because as we all know, the Yankees are evil. So with all of that put together, we immediately must fold this franchise if we're going to be morally consistent. And we all know that is not the goal here.
Right.
We all know that.
You have to ask yourself, why was somebody even looking into Kate Smith's history? Why? Why? Just to dismantle our history. Just to dismantle and besmirch another tradition. Well, what's next on the tradition line? And why do you think the New York Yankees would come out and take such a quick and strong stand against, in hopes that they will be saved, in hopes that nobody will look into their record and say, wait a minute, you're even worse than Kate Smith, hoping that if they just offer this dead woman and her reputation, an American hero, really, truly,
you know what,
an American
Glenn,
hero,
give them Czechoslovakia.
Yes.
What are they? That's just one little thing. The Sudetenland, just give it to them. What's the big deal?
They've promised they're not going to march into Poland.
They promise they won't.
They won't.
And you know what? You can take Adolf at his word, I'm sure.
Yes.
It's what they're doing. They're giving the sacrifices and hoping it goes away. Well, for the Yankees, at least, it shouldn't go away, because number one, they're evil. And number two, just like a bunch of other teams, you know, and I think the column makes a good point. Like, I think we have to fold every team that wasn't an expansion team. Any team that was in this era that banned black players obviously should be folded. We should tear down all the stadiums and hope that this dark part of our history can go away. And maybe we can relaunch a new New York team. Got to be different owners. Got to be a different name. But maybe the New York can have a baseball team in the future. It just can't be related to that horrible thing that we had in the past.
The Metropolitans.
Oh, yeah, they already have those. But yes.
Do they really?
Well, they call them the Mets. You may be familiar.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The Mets. I didn't know it stood for the Metropolitans. I'm like, that's not, I'm trying to think, what's the worst name you could come up with? The Metropolitans.
And by the way, Glenn's draft coverage coming tomorrow on this show, because it's going to be a freaking adventure.
That's amazing.
I think they should name a basketball team the Knickerbockers. Yes, Glenn, that's a good idea. They should.
Well, I'm glad they shortened those.
Yeah.
All right. all right, let me tell you about 23andMe. 23andMe. This is an amazing journey you can take with your family. I took this with my family, and it's really remarkable. Really, truly remarkable. We couldn't wait for my history to come back and Tanya's history to come back and to be able to see it with the kids and open it up every night. And some of just the traits the kids were looking at going, oh my gosh, Mom, that is absolutely you. Dad, that's absolutely you. Yes. Even the trait that says my genes usually only found in the world's top athletes. Just saying.
Really? How did they get them there?
I have no idea. I have no idea. Anyway, Mother's Day, limited time only. 23andMe taking $30 off their health and ancestry kit until May 13th. It's just cool to do things as a family. And this is one thing when, you know, we sent in our tests and the family got together and we read them together. It's really, really cool. It is a Mother's Day gift that is truly unique. 23andMe health and ancestry kit. She can discover how her genes may influence her health with more than 125 personalized genetic reports and feature information on her traits and health, like genetic weight, caffeine consumption, sleep, movement, so much more. And also, Mom can have a genetic ancestry breakdown so she can see her history. And we learn so much about our history. Mother's Day, $30 off with the 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit. You'll find it now at the number 23andme.com/Beck. That's 23andme.com/Beck. Offer ends May 13th. You know, the Blaze has had several graduating classes here. And one of the original alumni is Will Kane. And Will is an amazingly smart guy, really good guy. He's got a great career going for him. And I'm thrilled that he, you know, really kind of kicked his career off in some ways here. And now at ESPN, and he is demonstrating such courage. He didn't have to get involved in this Kate Smith thing. But listen to this argument. What show is this from, Stu?
I don't remember. It's him and Stephen A. Smith, and I think Max Kellerman on ESPN.
So listen to what Will has to say about Kate Smith.
You're asking me and Max, Will, what are you suggesting should be done?
Okay. I'm suggesting it's an absolute and utter fool's errand to go back through history, decades, someone who's been passed away for 30 years, incidents which occurred 8 decades ago, and apply modern historical standards to something you can almost reach a century. I'm suggesting that your standard, yours, only requires a handful of people to be a little outraged to go back and tear statues down. And I'm telling you that by your standard, President Obama's statues would not stand to today's standards when it comes to gay rights.
Stephen
and
A.
That to me
that's pretty damn easy for you to say
this.
Because you're not the offended party. It's real easy for the person or the group that's not the offended party to take that position.
And let me just
really,
you're going.
As a member of the not offended party in almost every circumstance, it is not easy at all.
No.
The easiest thing in the world is to act offended.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, I'm
it's
with
called
you.
Virtue signaling.
Exactly. That's the easiest thing in the world to do.
Correct.
Just go on with whatever party is being offended. You side with them. You look virtuous. You can't get in trouble. It's the easiest thing in the world to do.
It takes great courage to do what Will Kane did. And it takes a little bit of thing. Now, I don't know anything about Stephen's
Stephen A. Smith. Yeah,
Stephen A. Smith
is, you know, he's an interesting guy, because sometimes you're like, yes, yes, I totally agree with what he's saying. And then other times you're like, oh, man, why is he saying that?
I mean, this it takes no thinking at all. I mean, listen to what he just said. You know, my people are the
aggrieved party.
Aggrieved party. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we don't put the family of those who a crime has been committed against in the jury box, nor do we put them in the seat of judgment on sentencing. We don't. We can listen to the aggrieved party and hear them and say, okay, I see how much damage has been done here, and we'll take that into consideration. But we don't let the aggrieved party judge or sentence. That's what's different about America. You're supposed to be blind on this. And if you are angry, you don't listen. And that's not me saying that. That's science. You don't listen. Your shields go up because you're angry and you're injured. The Kate Smith thing is so easy to talk about because, A, it didn't just happen 80, 90 years ago. It was a parody. It was making fun of racists at the time. But you're so angry about it that you won't even listen to that. You won't even look for that.
Yeah, it's similar to OJ, right? Like it wasn't listening to the evidence that made that him be not guilty. Even as
correct.
Jurors on the case have now admitted it wasn't about him. It was about how we've been wronged all this time. That's a terrible way to make decisions on individuals. But if you happen to be a collectivist, well, then it makes a lot of sense. And that's why this fight between individualism and collectivism is so important. I mean, because you can always be on the wrong side. Anyone can say they're the offended party. It's a great job by Will Cain there to stand up. He's not perfect. I mean, he's a Cowboys fan. But other than that, he's pretty good.
Coming up next, my hometown Seattle, dying. We've got a great show lined up, a great hour for you that you don't want to miss, especially if you're a lover of socialism or you know what socialism really is. That's coming up in just a second. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is our spotlight sponsor this half hour. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's a company that I started, years ago, and started it just as a way for us to connect you to the right real estate agent, just born out of frustration for me and trying to buy a house or sell a house and not knowing who the right real estate agent is. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. We started it years ago. The results are absolutely amazing. The letters that come in, the people that have connected and sold their house. Some of them tried to sell their house for like a year and a half. They'll sell it in 6 weeks. These are the people who get the job done. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I'm trying to come up with a fair definition for what I think American socialism is to people who, you know, claim to be democratic socialists. Something that is fair but accurate. And if you look at Seattle and you think, what happened to that city? How did they get to where they are? Look at San Francisco. How did that happen? Well, I think because of the definition of how I would define socialism. I want to talk about what's happening to these great, great cities and the absolute effect of socialism that is now being pushed as the answer for the entire country. You want to see our future? Look at Seattle. We begin there in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
For all your biggest achievements in life, who has been there for you? Your mom. Your mom has always been there. Your mom was the one that, you know, if you're a female, held your hair while you were retching in the toilet. You know, or if you're a hippie, I guess your mom could have been holding your hair too. Or if you're I don't mean to get into these binary choices. How am I doing this? I'm sorry. Your mother, no matter what gender she is, no matter what gender you are, deserves flowers. 1-800-FLOWERS. 1-800-Flowers. Mother's Day is right around the corner, and show her how much you appreciate the love that she has shown you by going to 1-800-Flowers.com. Now, 1-800-Flowers.com is having a special 36 for 36. 36 sorbet roses. These are beautiful, beautiful roses in pastel shades of pink and orange and lavender. They're $36. That's $1 per rose. You're not going to find that the closer you get to Mother's Day. This offer ends on Friday. 36 for 36, and you can only get it at 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio icon and enter the promo code BECK. 36 for 36, 1-800-Flowers.com, promo code BECK. So, KOMO News did a documentary on Seattle called Seattle is Dying, and a friend of mine from Seattle sent it to me, and I watched it, and I couldn't believe it was the same city that I knew and loved and grew up in. It is turning into an absolute nightmare, and not just a nightmare for the people who live there, you know, and are doing well or whatever, but for the homeless and the mentally unstable. It is becoming a concentration camp. It's horrible, all in the name of justice. It is horrible what is happening in Seattle. It's almost a complete breakdown. I asked Stu to watch it. Did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah.
Incredible, wasn't it?
It really is. I had no idea it was as bad as the documentary showed. I mean, you know, look, we all know that every city has areas and problematic issues, but this is goes way beyond, you know, anything that I've seen anywhere else, because essentially they portrayed it as the city has basically not, I wouldn't say given up, I would say intentionally is avoiding trying to make these situations better, I guess, on the basis of social justice for, I don't know if it's the homeless people or the people who use drugs or whatever it is. They're not prosecuting any of these crimes anymore. They're not trying to stop them. They're just letting everyone do whatever they want. So everyone's deciding, you know what looks like a toilet? That place right there in the middle of the sidewalk.
So, in fact, let me play a couple of the cuts from this documentary, because this is what is happening all over the country. The progressives have gone nuts. It's now full-fledged Marxism. And they are not enforcing the laws. It's chaos. It's horrible. And all in the name of compassion. Listen, here's Scott Lindsay on the homelessness and the rise in crime. Go ahead, cut
this
one.
Is a list of familiar faces, repeat offenders, people who break the laws, get caught, get released, and break the laws again and again and again. There are 100 names on the list. Scott Lindsay is the man who dived into public records and researched the list.
If we take somebody into the jail, don't give them meaningful help, and then put them right back out on the streets, we know they're going to commit the same crimes in the same places. And our public records, our criminal justice records, really show that that's exactly what's happening.
Look at the sheer volume of criminal cases. Calvin A., 68 criminal cases since 2002, repeated random assaults on random individuals. Drainan B., 54 criminal cases since 2016. Michelle C., 72 cases since 2000. And the list goes on and on. Seattle's mayor says this.
It is wrong to conflate homelessness with a rise in crime.
For at least 100 people, it would at the very least appear to be a factor.
Of the 100 that you looked at, what percentage of them were homeless?
Yeah, from our criminal justice records, 100% had indicators that they were currently homeless.
And what percent showed signs of addiction?
Yeah, 100% also showed signs of a substance use disorder.
And what percent were mentally ill?
Yeah, a little less than half had been evaluated by the courts formally for mental health conditions, serious, severe mental health conditions.
That's incredible.
Dozens and dozens and dozens of times, the same people, they pick them up and can't do anything about it.
Now, listen to this. Imagine being a police officer in Seattle. Let's play Homeless Man Says He's Conquered Justice System. This is an amazing scene.
And escalated into assaulting police officers.
This is-
He's standing in a garbage can.
A bunch of cops were deployed.
Stand up so we can get out of here.
Berge spit on them.
Don't spit.
Fought them.
Hey, no biting. Don't bite yourself either.
Stand up, Travis. We're going to the gurney. Here's the gurney.
It lasted hours.
Well, I'm actually not even high right now.
Travis is outrageously unapologetic about his life and his world. He could care less about yours.
Do you steal for your habit?
I actually just started stealing last Monday. I started stealing, and oh my God, dude. That was one of the hardest sacrifices, is to, like, do unrighteous things in front of my dudes.
Travis, just relax. Travis, do you want to smoke? Travis, you want a smoke or a candy bar? No!
But,
will you continue to do that?
Oh, I'm having a blast now. It is so much fun.
What should the system do with a guy like you?
I think that this system has done what any viable, legitimate system would. And they've really, like, exalted me and, like, shown deference and love towards me.
Back the
I want to see you pick it up with your mouth. Remember when you caught it with your toes?
And, like, I don't feel like I'll ever be arrested again. I haven't been in jail for, like, a year and 3 months or so, you know? So a change like that, responding to a big change, definitely shows that I have conquered the criminal justice system.
Want to know the sad part, the truly frustrating part? He's probably right.
It's amazing. These scenes look like they're out of, like, Reno 911. They don't even look real. Like Ronnie Dobbs from Mr. Show. Like, there's some guy who's just out there going crazy on the cops. And, I mean, it looks like a parody of the television show Cops, but it's actually happening.
And the cops are leaving. The cops can't do it anymore. Let me play the third cut here. Seattle cops express frustrations. Listen to this.
One officer wrote simply, "Yes, I am frustrated because I'm a law enforcement officer that is told not to enforce the law." Another wrote, "It's simple. Start keeping criminals in jail. Judges need to stop giving them ridiculously low sentences, and prosecutors need to stop accepting cheesy plea deals and actually lock people up when they commit a crime." That's all it would take to drastically lower Seattle's crime rate. Another officer said, "People come here because it's called Freeattle, and they believe if they come here, they will get free food, free medical treatment, free mental health treatment, a free tent, free clothes, and will be free of prosecution for just about everything." And they're right. It didn't used to be that way. Law enforcement officers used to be able to enforce the laws. This officer continues, "In the last 5 years, there has been a culture shift, and it started with the legislature decriminalizing felonies and dumping convicts onto the streets." And then there is this. An officer says, "Even if quality warrant arrests are made, the judicial system sees fit to let them out of jail within a couple of days, often the next day. Why are we risking our lives to take felony-level fugitives into custody if they're just going to be released? Prosecutor's office and judges alike seem to be drinking all the Kool-Aid, causing a huge disconnect and a broken system with absolutely no teeth."
He went on to say, people will ask, why didn't we put any of the officers that responded positively about it? And he said, because we received exactly zero responses from police officers that were positive. Seattle is dying, and it's dying because of a socialist system, and it is spreading all over the country. Just this last weekend, the Dallas, Texas DA said, as long as people steal things that are worth less than $750, he will not prosecute unless it was to enrich themselves. What the hell does that even mean? What he meant was, there are people that need things, and if they go into a store and they really need it, and it's less than $750, unless they were taking that to sell it, you know, then they're okay. We're not going to prosecute. That's the kind of stuff that leads to what's happening in Seattle and San Francisco, and it is destroying so many of our great, great cities. It's destroying them.
Will anyone stand up? Well, the people are in Seattle. And what was so incredible in this documentary was to see how out of touch, no, to see how arrogant the city council and the mayors are, and see how they despised the people who voted for them. They despise them. We go there in 1 minute. First, let me tell you about 19 guns they're giving away on Friday. 19 guns from the USCCA. I want you to get registered to win one of these handguns. They're great new handguns. If you would like one, the USCCA is the United States Concealed Carry Association, top provider of self-defense education, training, and legal protection in the country. Their membership is really amazing. They're giving away free guns to responsible Americans just to introduce themselves to you. All you have to do to get one of your 19 free chances to win is just text the word BECK to 87222. You get 19 chances to win with one text, one word, BECK to 87222. Go right now. You'll find out what gun they're giving away. It's an awesome gun. And all you have to do is just text the word BECK to 87222 right now. We break for 10 seconds. Station ID. Okay. Seattle, on fire, totally on fire. Let me play cut four. Seattle cop blogger quits, calls it a concentration camp. Listen to this.
There was a police officer named Todd Wiebke. He prided himself on getting his boots dirty, on meeting the people on the fringes, in the camps. He tried to find common ground as human beings, and he tried to police. He wrote a blog for a long time, first-person musings about patrolling what happens in the dark shadows of West Seattle. Not long ago, he wrote this. This week I dealt with crisis, with narcotics, with heartache, and with liars. Sometimes all at once, sometimes one at a time. I am helpless to unlock the doors when dealing with a person trapped in a horror inside of their own mind. Lord, I try, but I am a limited man with just a little skill. I still love coming to work. We have an awesome city with the ability to adapt and overcome. The only way to lose is to not try. We are trying to solve this crisis, and we will not lose. And then one day this past October, Todd Wiebke was told by one superior to impound an RV and clean up the spot. And when he did it, another superior scolded him for doing so because of new protocol. He had a bellyful, and he walked into HR, and he quit. Retired, just like that.
I feel like I abandoned the ship, that I walked away, that and I did, because I couldn't do it anymore. It was just the bureaucracy built up to the point where I felt like I was no longer necessary as a police officer, that the system had a different idea of how they wanted to handle it, and I was an appendix. I needed to be gone, so I'm gone.
Ask anyone. They'll tell you this was a good cop, the kind we want out there, the kind we need.
But I will tell you that there is no morale. There's a love for the job.
He says the drugs, the camps, the theft, the rot, and the disgrace of it all don't have to destroy Seattle. They're being allowed to.
Everybody's trying to do the right thing. It's just coming out wrong.
Listen to these next words carefully. Let them sink in.
You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that the only thing I can equate it to is we're running a concentration camp without barbed wire, up to and including the medical experiment of poisoning these people with drugs. I don't know how else to put it, and it's infuriating.
Now, when people speak out, they're shouted down. Here's a lifetime resident of Seattle calling out the city council for ignoring solutions to the homeless problem. Listen.
Steve Danishek has spent his whole life in Seattle. He says when misdemeanors stopped being enforced, it was the beginning of the end.
And at that point, everyone got the message. It's a free-for-all down here. It's a Wild West. No laws apply. Do whatever you want. I could go down here and pee on the street or crap over there or smoke a joint, I have, no one's going to get arrested for doing that because they're not doing that. They're not arresting anyone.
If I was a city council member, I might say, well, we're overwhelmed. We've got this homeless epidemic.
No. The city council is not overwhelmed by anything. The city council are idiots. They know that there are solutions out there. They simply have turned their back on the solutions.
The problem is, and you see in this documentary, it's from KOMO News in Seattle, called Seattle is Dying. Watch it, because it's coming to a city near you. The city council is brutal to the people who are standing up. They're like, you got to call the police. And the people are saying, I did call the police and they said to come to you. Now you're sending me back to the police. People are just getting the runaround. That's why when I'm trying to describe this socialism, this Marxism that's coming, I try to do it charitably, but it is a group of non-expert experts who believe truly that they are smarter than the people that they serve. They make the rules, the laws, and market decisions that, yes, may hurt individuals, but those individuals are just part of out-of-favor groups. And those individuals can either afford it or deserve it. All things are done in the guise of or for the goal of social or economic justice. As those things begin to break down, those in control also begin to abuse their power through graft, greed, and ignorance. That's what's happening. They're just getting cronies coming in saying, oh, no, you're a genius. No, we can fix this. No, that's right. Give me some power. Give me some money and I'll help you. And the people are getting and the people on city council and the people in city hall are growing further and further away from the people and the problem. And that's what's happening in Washington, D.C. as well. Those people in Washington, D.C., do you think they actually like you? Do you think Nancy Pelosi wants to come over to your house and have dinner at your house? Do you think she would just fit in with all of your friends? That she'd be saying the same kinds of things that you're saying? Do you think? Because I don't. I don't think most of the people in Washington would be comfortable around you. Would be comfortable around me. They would come and see me because I have some sort of influence, they think. And so they'll come and see me, but they don't want to. They don't need to come see you, especially if we get rid of the Electoral College. They'll never see you. That's what's happening in Seattle. The elites are running it because they know better than the other people that live here. And they don't know jack. And they're destroying our cities. And they're about to destroy our nation. And here's the amazing thing. We're almost celebrating it. We're almost celebrating it. So many people in our country are just so blindly attaching to the emotions, to the feelings, or to the word that they don't even understand, socialism. A week from tonight, a free event that we want everyone to watch, you, your family, everyone. It's called Socialism, A Warning from the Dead. This warning actually comes from a former Soviet ally or former Soviet protectorate from their historians in the communists' vault of how to flip a nation. It only takes them 3 years. I'm telling you, after reading what they were doing in the 1950s, boy, it's not going to take 3 years from here. They're already doing it, and we're very close. We give that special to you free on all platforms next week, Blaze
You're
TV.
Listening to Glenn Beck.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Look, here's the thing. Now is the time to get into a new home. Interest rates are extremely low. New mortgage payments, especially, please get a mortgage payment that is locked down, a mortgage payment that is affordable, and much less than a rent payment.
That sounds pretty good, but I'd like to get it from someone who's getting a big kickback from the banks. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, it's possible.
You can
go almost any place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, don't go to American Financing.
Okay, I'll avoid them.
They don't get the kickbacks from the banks. They work for you.
Well, I want to make sure that they're at least getting giant commissions on each loan.
No. These are all salary-based people.
They're going to make sure they sell you on any loan they can, though. They're going to be aggressive.
No, they're going to find the one. They're going to be the one that they'll find the one for you. It's American Financing. Be ahead of the spring home buying competition. Get American Financing digital mortgage. You can apply online, get your pre-qualification letter instantly. Start shopping right away. 800-906-2440, AmericanFinancing.net.
Well, it's blazetv.com/Glenn. Watch the Kamala Harris special. You can use the promo code Glenn. Save $10. And tomorrow, Glenn predicts the NFL draft.
Yes!
We're talking about a documentary that came out from KOMO News in Seattle called Seattle is Dying. I was shocked by this documentary because I grew up in the Seattle area, grew up in Mount Vernon, Washington. I love Seattle. It's one of my favorite cities. And it's just being destroyed. And I saw this documentary and I thought, I recognize the street corners that this is all happening on. This used to be a great part of the city. It's now just a horror show. And all in the name of Marxism and compassion, they are just destroying people. And I mean the homeless people, just destroying them. And all of the people that are living there are living through hell. And it doesn't seem to me like the city council has anything but contempt for the people who live in Seattle, pay taxes, and are trying to run businesses or just go to work. Ari Hoffman, he is a board member on a cemetery in Seattle that was part of this documentary. And we wanted to get him on to talk a little bit about, you know, his experience and what happened with the cemetery that he's a board member of. Hello, Ari. How are you?
Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you for coming on the program.
It's my pleasure.
Sure. I don't know your politics, don't really care about your politics, but do want to hear about your experience in Seattle and what happened to you and the cemetery that you're a board member of.
Sure. I've been on the board for about 10 years, and the cemetery has been around for 130 years. And the name of the cemetery is Bikur Cholim, which translates to helping the sick. And it funds our synagogue services for the Jewish community. And what happened was I got a call about a year ago exactly that said, hey, Ari, we have a problem. Prostitution, drug dealers, pimps, drug dealers, and addicts have all moved into the cemetery. We have a real problem here. They're causing hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage. Can you help us out? And I went to elected officials. I went to city officials. I went to anybody I thought could help, and nobody was interested in helping us. So I took it to the media, and we started this massive media campaign, and finally enough pressure was brought to bear that things started changing. And we even had to bring armed former Israeli soldiers out to the cemetery to guard some kids who were putting flags in the ground for a Memorial Day event that they do every year.
What part of Seattle is it? This isn't a bad part of Seattle?
Is it all Seattle?
It's in Northgate.
This is in Northgate, which is a nice neighborhood in Seattle, and nothing ever happens out there. We haven't had anything like this in 130 years of being in operation. And because of policies by the Seattle City Council, this is now happening.
So what are the policies that lead people to go and live in a cemetery?
It's much enabling behavior. People are coming from across the country because they hear that they can get free whatever they want in Seattle, and nobody's going to do anything. Nobody's going to enforce the rule of law, and they can get away with whatever they want. They can live wherever they want, and nobody's going to do anything about it.
When I was in San Francisco a few years ago, I was driving my car, and these homeless people came, and they were walking in the street, and they just started pounding on my hood. And they were belligerent. Who do you think you are with your car? And I was like, I'm just driving to the hotel. I'm what? And they were, you know, coming across the street, and they made it very clear they own the street, not the cars, not the people who are trying just to, you know, get to and fro and obeying the law. They own the street. Is that attitude pervasive now in Seattle as well?
Yes, near my office in Georgetown, which is a more industrial area, a whole bunch of these RVs have moved in, these broken down vehicles, which people are living in. And the city council keeps claiming these are homeless people, but I know that they're running drugs and other criminal enterprises out of these vehicles. And when I go up to confront them to get them to move, they say things to me like, I make more money dealing drugs than you'll ever see in a lifetime. It's become a very dangerous neighborhood. It's not safe. And Georgetown is unique because it has a residential neighborhood mixed in with commercial neighborhood. And the residents there are themselves. So one of these people stole in a full-size semi-truck, the cab part of it, and crashed into a few cars the other day. It's just out of control in that neighborhood.
So, Ari, you're running for city council.
Yes, sir. I decided I had enough of what was going on and that the only way to get things done sometimes is to step in yourself and try and get it done. So that's what I did. I stepped up to the plate and said, it's got to be better than what these guys are doing. And I started doing my research and I started analyzing and I realized this was all a policy problem. And it was all the behavior they were enabling in Seattle. And they're not treating the drug addiction. They're not treating the mental illness. And they're calling it a housing crisis, a homeless crisis.
So, but it is really, and I don't want to get into politics, but it is this social and economic justice attitude that creates these policies that are so prevalent in Seattle and San Francisco, and the arrogance that usually goes with that. I mean, I've seen clips of the city council. They're not listening to the people. They don't care about the people. It's almost like they despise the people.
It sure seems like that to me as well. We try to talk to them. They refuse to meet with us. One of them was supposed to come out to the cemetery to meet with us and send staff instead, even though we had organized the community to be there to meet with them. Another one refused to meet with us and said, flat out, had their staff tell us they're not meeting with us. And I just had enough of that. So what I did was I took their office number and their email for their office, and I put it online, and I said, hey, Jewish community, let them know what you think. And 6 hours later, they called me for a meeting because they got so much pressure. Mm. But at the same time, after that meeting, they said, you know, they made all these promises in this meeting, and they didn't follow through on any of them, and we still had to do things ourselves. I mean, during the winter, things got better at the cemetery just because people didn't want to be outside. They moved to other areas of Seattle. But just 2 weeks ago, the RVs came back and were dealing drugs again, and thank God we got a grant in the off-season, I'll call it, for safety at the cemeteries, and we had to send the guards back out there to enforce things.
Jeez. How's your election going?
Well, I'm getting so many attacks online. I must be the front runner. We don't really do polling for these kind of things, city council races. So,
well, you're Jewish, so I don't know if you're a front runner. I mean, Jewish people tend to be a target now, unfortunately, and I'm sorry for that. But you can't put anything into attacks. But at least you're over the target if they're attacking you.
Exactly. I heard a good line from somebody that if you're getting heavy flack, you must be over the target.
Yes.
And I think my message is really resonating because there's people from all over Seattle, from all sides of the political spectrum, saying they want to support me because enough is enough and things have just gone too crazy. And that's the most unique thing to me, is how united the citizens seem to be in wanting a change on the Seattle City Council and wanting to push back of these policies that enabled all this.
I will tell you that I was struck by KOMO News the way this was written. I don't know how many times they asked the question, is this compassion? And the documentary was, I thought, really well done, and kept asking the question for a Seattleite, with a way for them to hear is through the heart, that if you're doing these things because you think this is compassion, you're wrong. You're sadly mistaken. You are seeing people on the the people who are electing officials. Are you seeing elected officials at all waking up? Is there any sign that anybody else that's already in office is waking up going, hey, guys, this doesn't work?
Not really. It seems more like they're saying the things that people want to hear occasionally, so that way they may have a chance at re-election. But it seems that the average citizen has said, I'm tired of being called non-compassionate when I'm trying to get people treatment for drug addiction. I'm tired of being called non-compassionate when I'm trying to get people into shelters. I'm tired of being called non-compassionate because I don't want people sleeping on the streets or in their cars. And the citizens are tired of being told they're not compassionate.
Yeah. All right, thank you so much. Appreciate it, and good luck. Hoffman.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. HoffmanForSeattle.com. Don't know his politics, but if you want to check it out, HoffmanForSeattle.com.
I don't think if you're in Seattle, you care about the politics of the person. You just want someone who's taking that issue seriously. It doesn't seem like there's anyone there doing it.
Yeah.
You know, you want someone who's going to take that on and actually be brave enough to stand up and say, hey, this is wrong.
I think that's what's happening all over the world. You know, people just they just don't care. And in Seattle, you know, they're letting people out on the streets that are really, really sick and people that they know are going to commit more crimes. I mean, I don't know if you saw, did you see in the documentary the story of the rapist?
Yeah, this. I mean, you want to talk about real consequences? Listen to this.
Police say that on July 20th of 2017, this man, Louis Arby III, 41 years old, removed the screen from a woman's window at an assisted living facility in SeaTac and crawled in. The woman inside was brutalized for an hour. She was raped and beaten and choked and robbed. Police say Louis Arby also urinated on the floor. Afterwards, police say he left through the same window he'd entered through. The victim was treated for bleeding on the brain, a broken nose, and other injuries. She was 71 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a shocking and disturbing crime, but perhaps we shouldn't have been all that surprised. Just 4 days before the rape, just 96 hours before police say he scarred one woman's life forever, Louis Arby III was arrested here, sitting next to the fountain, right outside the King County Courthouse. Police say he was selling methamphetamine. That's him in the back of the squad car after the arrest. He was booked and then released almost immediately. Our criminal justice system decided that he shouldn't spend even 24 hours in jail. But even a brief look at his record would have shown that Louis Arby had come from California, where he'd spent 19 years in prison for kidnapping, robbery, and carjacking. Jeez. And had prosecutors looked a little more closely, they'd have known that Arby was the only suspect in a case 3 months prior in which a woman was taken hostage, forcibly shot full of drugs, and viciously raped and beaten for 15 hours. The King County Prosecutor's Office says, in this case, we had information that he had a 1995 California conviction for kidnap to commit robbery and other offenses. The prosecutors assigned to the investigation had no knowledge of other pending investigation. And so we are left with a question. How is it that a man is arrested in front of a courthouse in possession of a deadly drug that destroys lives? How is it that this man, who has a long history of violence, doesn't even spend 24 hours in jail? How is it that he is sent right back onto the streets? Mm.
A compelling, compelling, and compassionate documentary that I think everybody should watch. You can watch it. I watched it on YouTube. It's from KOMO TV in Seattle, and it is called Seattle is Dying. It's coming to a city near you. If you're in constant pain, you are not alone. I know, because I was too. My pain and inflammation so bad that there were times that my wife had to button my shirts and tie my shoes. And it's so emasculating to have that happen to you. It's horrible. And I just wanted it to stop. And when it didn't, over 5 years, it just kept coming and then going and then coming back even worse. I just had given up. And my wife, luckily, said, please just try this. And I didn't think it would work, but I tried it and it has worked for me. Hadn't got rid of all of my pain all the time, but boy, it has cut it way back. It's called Relief Factor. I want you to try Relief Factor at ReliefFactor.com. Call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. It's ReliefFactor.com. You know, when you look at the world today and where we're headed, there is a very clear choice on a few things. We used to be pretty clear on Israel, but boy, things are, well, some people would say getting muddy, but they're becoming very black and white, and you gotta see where you stand. If you stand with the left, you stand with Bernie. In the town hall that he just did, he said, you know, it's a Benjamin Netanyahu and his party. That's a hate group. That's a hate group. AOC, anti-Israel. Ilhan Omar, anti-Israel. Rashida Tlaib, anti-Israel. These are
This is where the party is headed. And they are anti-Semitic, not pro-Palestinian, as much as anti-Semitic as well. The party is changing. On the other side, you have Donald Trump, who has thrown a lot of shade to Benjamin Netanyahu and to Israel itself. In fact, Benjamin Netanyahu threw a little bit back his way. Listen to this released yesterday.
I'm here on the beautiful Golan Heights. All Israelis were deeply moved when President Trump made his historic decision to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Therefore, after the Passover holiday, I intend to bring to the government a resolution calling for a new community on the Golan Heights named after President Donald J. Trump.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Trump has been amazing on the Israel stuff. Better than anyone could have possibly imagined.
I would have guessed it.
Yeah. No,
I didn't. Mm-hmm. Really wrong on Israel.
Yeah, I had it nailed, but you really did miss that one. and I was disappointed in you the whole time.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Step by step this entire time, we're coming up on a year anniversary of him naming Jerusalem and opening the embassy in Jerusalem mm-hmm. as the actual capital of the country that says it's the capital, which is usually how we judge what the capital is of a country. That's coming up in just in a couple of weeks. We've got a great special coming up on that. It's one of these things where you kind of step back and think, wow, all of the presidents, all these times, both Democrat and Republican, who have said that they would do the things that Donald Trump has mm-hmm. gone ahead and actually done, mm-hmm. and he deserves a lot of unqualified credit for mm-hmm. what he's done with Israel. It's been mm-hmm. incredible. I'm blown away by it. I'm blown away.
And grateful, really, yes. Truly grateful. And so obviously are the people of Israel. He has not only moved the embassy to Jerusalem, where it has always belonged, but he has also decided... I'm going to recognize the West Bank, otherwise known as Judea, and the Golan Heights as Jewish territory. God bless him. God bless him.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.